Would you introduce yourself, please?
It's Juice Box from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Dad taught photography. Mom was a sign language interpreter. This is what I've got so far. Milwaukee, punk rap, incendiary shows, Danger Bird Records, South by Southwest. You have your own radio show. You have a newsletter. How'd I do so far? We're done,
right? Yeah, that
right?
seems about right.
We're
I
done, though. We're done. There's nothing left
yeah,
to talk about.
Yeah, I'm going
right?
to go back to sleep.
The Buddy Holly of rap.
Well, you know, that was... I mean, you know, that was just Chuck D kind of goofing
no,
off.
No, I know. But the thing is, and we'll talk about this a lot, right? Labels, perceptions, realities.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people coming up to you in front of the elevator, right? And too interesting. Talk about a demographic, right?
Yeah.
You know, those guys, those are the last guys you'd expect to come up to you at the elevator and say, man, saw the show last night. That was wild. But that's perception versus reality, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, what fundamental to Juicebox is just like I've never fit in anywhere. So if I get in front of a crowd of like hardcore noise kids, half of them are going to love it and half of them are going to hate it. If I get in front of a crowd of, you know, industry people, half of them are going to love it, half of them are going to hate it.
But they're all going to talk about it.
Well, I the art and music that I've always love the most is the stuff that is divisive and the stuff that like has a real position, and so naturally that's what I want to make.
So that does two things. For the right people it entertains them, for the other people it scares them, but they still walk away.
In some ways there's like a larger conversation in my head that's based around the records I listened to growing up and the shows I saw growing up, and kind of like what I do is a way of talking back at that and trying to just like wrangle something out of this history that feels dead sometimes, but also I feel like there's still a justification for doing it, you know?
So take me through, just for kicks, you know, I mean, you've spoken in other conversations about kind of your career in phases. Like there's the 15 to 20 phase, there's the 26 to now phase. So I don't want to go through the phases because people can look that up.
Yeah.
What I'm more interested in is the trajectory to the now.
Sure.
And how that stew kind of got you to wherever it is we're sitting today, which we're not going to try to define because that would be a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, Juicebox is like it's a confusing thing. You know, I'm not just some band that formed, put out a couple records, slowly gained popularity, waned a little bit, and then broke. I mean, like, it's funny. Just as an aside, you know, there's bands that like, there's one band that I played a show with them in a garage in Chicago. They were like 16 at the time, you know, we played together in front of like 30 people. Flash forward like 7 years later, I run into them, they're playing at Coachella. I'm just hanging out there, I'm not playing Coachella. But then like a year after that, they break up. And within those 7 or 8 years, I'm just kind of like doing my thing. You know what I mean? Like I've seen
there's a lot of lessons to be learned there about longevity and about purpose, isn't there?
Well, I mean, like I've known that, and you know, I think it's been a struggle for me, but now that I'm a bit older, I can realize that the choices I've made have been because I'm trying to build this thing that maybe has some sort of a legacy and that kids can look to as some sort of inspiration for, like, you know, there's many different ways to live your life and you don't have to like do the thing. There's no one blueprint for being a musician or being an artist, you know, and I think if anything, I want to provide some like rough inspiration for kids. I mean, you know, music has been so important to me in terms of me just like fighting through whatever issues I've had in my life, and I think that it's given me a lot and I'm trying to sort of give back. Like I said, it's about a conversation or it's about just like a larger history and trying to find my place in some small way in that history. And that history is everything from, you know, whatever, like big pop music or Bruce Springsteen to the tiniest cult bands that play in basements, you know. To me, like, I have this weird sort of like narrative in my mind that is only singular to my experience. But I'm trying to, like, justify my existence within that imagined narrative of American music. I know that's very conceptual and probably stupid, but, like,
no,
it means a lot. It means so much to me, you know, like, it means a lot to me to see, I don't know, listening to the radio or going to punk shows. It's all just one weird thing to me.
When people do try to split this down to rap plus punk plus band plus, you know, performance equals juice box, that equation doesn't really work, does it?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't like really like begrudge anybody for trying to figure out what it is. And like, you know, as somebody who has been a DJ for a long time, I have respect for genre and like people micro classifying stuff. I'm actually fine with that because like, I think that, you know, people got to talk about
people
music.
People have to find a way to define life in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
They just do.
And, you know, but I think that I've always, it's never really been a goal of mine to fit in neatly anywhere. I've always been kind of interested in existing on the peripheries of a bunch of things at once. And that makes it really hard to define, you know. Yeah. But there's something, to me, there's something exciting about that. Or like, you can carve your own space and culture if you don't fully commit to any one thing. And if you can do a thing that can fit into different contexts, in you know, and that's still really exciting to me. But I also realize that it's harder for people to kind of like, I think when people are confused by something, oftentimes their first reaction is anger, you know?
And yet they probably, and I'm not speaking for other people that are in the audience, but I have been at enough of your performances surrounded by people, and I like looking at people. I like watching them react to a performer.
Yeah.
And their reaction to you is anything from, you know, delight and holy Toledo, I'm seeing a show, to fear, like, uh-oh, is he going to do this next to me, to I hope he doesn't damage himself, you know, to all of those things. But they're all legitimate answers.
Yeah.
To what you exude out of people.
Well, you know, it's always been about riding this line, like, which is to say, like, this interest in classic American showmanship coupled with this interest in very unhinged underground music and trying to do a thing that doesn't fall squarely into either of them, which is to say, like, I want to put on a show. I want to be an entertainer. But also there's this, like, side of me that still prides this kind of raw energy that I learned from underground music. And it's about that sort of tension between these two things. And they're both two important things to me. And, like, riding that and, like, seeing what happens, you know what I mean?
And so when you kind of had to figure out where it was going to fit in terms of getting it out to the world, obviously there's a million ways to get out to the world, but there's Danger Bird Records. And but they still have to, you know, get you out there, and that becomes the job, right?
Sure.
So on the other side of the fence, the connection between the live show and the records, you know, are, do you think there is challenge? I don't mean this in a bad way, but when you go to make the records, you want to get the energy of the live show in there, but you also are smart enough to know that you're also making a record.
Yeah, I mean, and that's always been, I think that's like a classic struggle for artists or bands that have a certain kind of live show, like trying to figure out how to capture that on. And it's more complicated for me because, like, as a songwriter, I'm interested in writing pop music.
Ah.
Which is what makes, like, I could, there's our records I could make. If I didn't care about songcraft, I could make more unhinged sounding records that maybe in some abstract way capture the chaos of the show. But, like, this new thing that I've been working on, I, like, more than anything, I'm trying to write these anthemic songs, you know? And I'm excited about, like, I think one thing that's interesting about rock music now is that there's been a certain, especially for younger kids, there's a sort of flattening.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm excited by that because I'm always like, how can rock be, as somebody who listens to a lot of very contemporary rap music, very contemporary electronic music, I'm interested in how can rock music, how can it feel contemporary, and how can it have this kind of edge? And I'm just like, okay, we're at an era where kids,
they're hearing whoa, whoa, whoa every third.
But it's also like kids, like, they grew up, like, at this point, like, Weezer is a classic rock band.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, but I think there's something exciting about that. Or at this point, like, you know, the Gin Blossoms and Guided by Voices, at some point, like, there's a flattening where it's like in the 90s, it'd be like, there's such a cultural differences between those two bands. But now it's just like, oh, they're both just great power pop bands.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I like that time has, like, kind of eroded these, like, meaningless.
It's equalized it.
And, like, there's something, I feel like now you can make connections between different things. And that's exciting to me. And, like, I think that's a way forward for being a songwriter who works with guitar music. If you have an interesting story and if you have an interesting perspective, there's room for you to make music. Meaning that, like, nothing is really relevant or irrelevant anymore as much as you want to make it.
There was a book, there was criticism, there was input, there was all sorts of stuff. And now we're 5 years down the road from all of this stuff. But you've got a label that's a good label. You've got, you know, a powerful distribution group. You've got all the girders to do the next thing, right? And you've got the freedom. That's pretty, you know, do you ever, like, step back and go, you know,
absolutely,
I can now make my stuff, and I have the team, and I have the place to finally, after all of this, whatever word you want to use, the Jewish word be schlepping, you know, all this work. Do you ever, like look at the trajectory and say, oh, this is the moment? Or
well,
do you
no,
just...
I mean, like, it's, like, what I've realized is it's, like, you know, I've been doing this for so long, and I've had, like, peaks and valleys in my career, many of them,
right.
You know, and what I've realized is it's, like, it's really not about anything other than doing the thing right now. It's not about, oh, how far can this go? How big can this go? It's about, like, the show tonight. This is what matters. I want to push my career as far as possible. Don't get things twisted. But what really excites me at this point is just, like, being in the present and focusing on the next record, focusing on the next show, and trying to do as good of a job as possible. Because, you know, when I was in my 20s, I had all these stupid aspirations, had all these, like, deluded ego fantasies, and that didn't serve me because I feel like I was thinking, I wasn't approaching it from a place of, like, purity.
No, I get
you know
it.
What I mean? Like, I was, I, you know, I was living on couches, I was touring on Greyhound buses, but then, you know, Public Enemy would swoop me up and I would go on that tour and things would pick up, then things would go down. And now I'm just more like, okay, I'm trying to, like, be as good as I can possibly be at the thing that I'm doing. It's not about anything other than that, you know? Like, if I was still cared about all this other stuff, if that was what was driving me, I would have quit a long time ago. The reason I'm still doing this is because I love to make these records and play these shows, and everything else, like, is auxiliary to that. And I want to take that as far as it can go. Like, don't get it twisted, you know?
So, well, okay, so let's talk about twisted, because I think people probably kind of, so they'll see you, they'll see the show. And again, it's fun to watch reactions. You probably are so into the moment of what you're doing that you're not looking as you were on the floor last night or whatever it was. You're not looking up and going, geez, I wonder what they're thinking. But I think what they want to know is what you're thinking.
Well, it's the kind of thing where, like, you know, it's free, on some level, it must feel very freeform to the audience, but, like, we spend a lot of time, like, figuring out these transitions.
This is what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
So it's the idea.
Need to know
yeah,
this.
Yeah. It's the idea of, like, okay, there's a lot of craft at play and there's a lot of preparation at play. So, and that preparation is done so that when we're playing, I can go crazy. And that the
this
whole.
This is my point.
Yeah. So,
yes.
So it's this, like, it's always been to me, like, it goes back to this idea of, like, classic American showmanship and freaked out underground bordering on performance art,
right.
Like riding the line between those two things. And in order to do that, you have to really like nail in on the craft. Like every song we, you know, there's very specific transitional stuff that we work on a lot. So the set just rolls, you know what I mean? And when I study like classic stuff on YouTube or when I, you know, have gone on tour with these bigger acts, what really makes a set special in a lot of ways is these small transitional moments.
Yeah.
That's, and like the crowd maybe isn't picking up on that, you know, consciously,
right.
But like, it's that, you know, like if it was just completely unhinged and there was like 30 second gaps between the songs, it wouldn't feel the way it feels. I'm trying to like transmit a very specific feeling here. You know what I mean? And I think a big part of that is how the set is constructed to just, there's no stopping. You know what I mean? I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh,
but
no,
we don't,
I know. Oh, no.
We don't stop. You know,
no,
like,
it's the second side of Abbey Road.
Some songs, you know, there's feedback between every song. But some songs, you know, we do like, you know, there's transitions where the drums
yeah.
don't stop. There's all sorts of tricks we do. And I think that's just because, like, it's looking at the set as one piece. you know, looking at the set as like this sort of totality. And I think, you know, I just look, you know, the thing that guides me is like what has blown my mind. And I try to like harness that energy. The idea is that we rehearse and it's so tight, and then like, then I can go climb on stuff.
Yeah, then I can go off
the
rails.
Then I can go throw audibles at the band if I want to.
Right.
You know, but it's like it takes a lot of rehearsal to get tight enough to get loose.
See, but that in and of itself is valuable for people to hear this, because then they can listen to the records and understand why they're so well crafted.
Yeah, I mean, it's all coming from a place of craft, but I think the thing that's important to remember is that even the craziest punk noise stuff that I saw growing up, the really good stuff, that was coming from a place of craft too.
Well, like, of course.
And so everything comes from a place. Everything that's good comes from a place of craft. The stuff that looks the craziest is often the stuff that is the most meticulously pre-prepared.
But I don't think audiences think about that at all.
And that's fine, and they don't have to. It's
not their job.
No, and that's the thing about, I don't want to talk about this book so much, but I think that was one of the things that Leon was wrestling with, is the idea that, like, I just feel so, there's something that feels so intuitive about what I do to the audience member, or there's something that feels so visceral. Yeah. And that's true too, but it's about the combination of just like pure impulse with like preparation. Well, and that's the thing that I think that's like a certain kind of artistry that if you're not doing it, it might be hard to process, because in some ways they're two very like oppositional ideas. Total impulsiveness versus total like preparation and meticulous craft. Yeah, but like where those things meet in the middle, that's where a lot of magic can happen. I think there's a very specific feeling I'm trying to transmit with the live show. And in order to do that, there's like a couple of, like I said, there's a couple of sort of oppositional impulses that I have to like figure out a way to synthesize. You know what I mean? And that's sort of I think that really is where like something special can happen, is that space where you're kind of walking the line between two different things, and there's different intentions happening simultaneously. And I think that's something I want to continue to explore. And I think that, you know, the thing about Juicebox, and I still believe this, is that it's truly scalable. You know?
Ooh, that word.
I know, which is hilarious, because it's like, it feels like tech terminology, but I think that like something that has like a purity of like intent and conceptualism, like the idea has always been that Juicebox can exist in a punk basement show, or it can exist in an arena stadium.
Yep.
And it's because there's something, the framework of it is so tight. You know, like I can play solo with an iPod in a basement, and the feeling that I transmit would be the same as if I played with a 10-piece band in a stadium.
Because it's about the performance at that.
It's about the performance, and it's about the parameters that I set for myself. Yep.
Amazing.
Like, you know that it's just like if there's some core tenets at play, and for me the tenets are really just like sadly like things that just blew my mind as a teenager and figuring out a way to participate. You know, I've always just wanted to participate, you know, like ever since I started this at 15, it was about things that impacted me so deeply and wanting to like be a part of that in some way, you know. So it's really comes from like, there's like a, I would like to hope that there's like a feedback loop at play when you make stuff.
You would hope.
You know, and like a kid, not even a kid, but a friend of mine came to a show in New York and told me that I was their inspiration for touring on a Greyhound bus.
That's cool though.
Because yeah, they saw a documentary about me, and that means a lot to me.
No, that means you're affecting things.
Because, you know, there are some things, like, I keep returning to this, but it's just like, you see, if you're 16 and you see something in a basement or a VFW hall with 20 other people, doesn't seem that important, but it can change your life.
Oh,
it can change the course of your life completely. And that's and what I forget is, like, in my 20s, I was traveling around, and, you know, I'd show up to some town and play a basement show for 20 people, and I'd feel like a failure. But only now recently do I realize that that was my contribution to the conversation, the thing that changed my life as a teenager. I've done that, and I continue to do that. And even if it's very small, even if it's me playing for 50 people in some college town, I realize that I'm contributing to this thing. And I have to step back and realize how important that is.
Talk to me, because your label came up to me and said, and I quote, and I've played the new single, But wait till you hear where this is going. So I'm going to ask you, this new music, where is it going?
Well, I really, you know, I hunkered some songs away in the bunker for the past like 5 years, and then I wrote some more, and 10 of the 10 best ones are on this new record. And it's I tried to really make something that kind of has the spirit of the live show, but is also it's like a, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been trying to figure out what to call it. It's a pop record, you know, on some level with guitars. And I tracked the vocals and mixed the record with this fellow Joe Hamilton.
Okay.
Who's mixed some sort of bigger contemporary rock records.
Was that your choice?
My manager suggested him, and I did a deep dive into his discography, and I decided that he would absolutely be a great choice.
Cool.
We worked together great, and there's some similarities, you know. He grew up playing in noise rock bands and kind of made this transition into doing stuff on a certain level. So we got along great. But anyway, we had coffee before we started working the record, and I was just like, let's see how far we can push this record, because the idea is that it's still going to be Juicebox.
Right.
Like, my personality is so over the top that no matter what we do or no matter how hard we try to push this
into
a certain zone,
nobody's going to homogenize it.
Yeah, it's always going to be this idiosyncratic thing. So let's just see how, let's have fun with this and let's see how far we can go in a certain direction, because, you know, in some ways, I got to say, this is a record I've been wanting to make for a long time, but I think I've been scared to make it because, you know, underground music can warp your brain.
Yes.
Underground music, it's like a form of Catholicism in some ways, and I feel like I've had Catholic punk rock Catholic guilt for a long time, even though, you know, like, I've always talked about making pop music and making pop records, and in a way it was a way for me to subvert my role within,
but in the end
they weren't pop records, and this one is, I mean, I don't know what to call it. It's definitely not like a, you know, there's guitars, but it's power pop, you know, in the most general sense of the term.
But in the end, it doesn't matter, because when the songs translate and people show up to the live show.
Exactly.
It's not going to, in any way, shape, or form, the live show is suddenly not going to transform itself into.
No.
Into Bastille.
No. The show.
I think that band just to do it, not for a bad.
Yeah. No, I mean, I the show is all, like, the way I play, like, that's not changing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. That's what I'm getting at. Exactly.
Like, there's always going to be, like, an edge to what I do that's, like, places it in a slightly different category.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be Juicebox.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's just, like, I'm excited about, once again, even, like, making this record, it's more just, like, I want to continue to do something that is, like, singular. Like, you know, the way I perform, it would be very easy for me to be, like, you know what? I'm going to start, like, a noisy punk band, and we're going to, like, have like some level of a career. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would be just because, like, I can, it's like I'm performing like a singer that could do that. But I'm like, no, I want to, it's always excited me. Like, I want to play pop music and play it like I'm the singer of a noise band.
Yep, I get it.
And I think that's more exciting. Like,
well, that's a nice filter to put it through.
Yeah, I just don't want to do what's easy. I've never wanted to do what's easy. I've always wanted to do what excites me as a performer. And that's why, you know, my career has been so idiosyncratic, because, like, I haven't made the easy choices.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside, so I can play anything.